his wife, world-famous individual, Professor Morty Tarragon, here touring New Zealand, and in Washington Heights is Dr. Charles Hexter visiting his mother. He's the only one who came in all the out from his siblings, and who do you think supports the family and takes charge long distance? The one who came to Israel. All right, we're ready to roll. Ah, two young men who are going to be Gedolei Israel. Don't let me down. Okay, it's up to you, but don't let me down.
No pressure.
Vic, anything new with your sister? Okay. Do you know who that gentleman is? His uncle is one of the most famous Rosh Yeshiva at Chaim Berlin, Rabbi Snow. You've heard the name, may believe you did, so the ignorant pass for the wise. That's his nephew. Today is November 12th. It's my mother's birthday. My mother always used to say she was very easy to remember. Her birth date was 11, 12, 13. So I recall my mother fondly, Zichrona Livracha. I want to say hello to all the students, so that I give the date. It's Sun Monday, November 12th, 2018. I say hello to the wonderful students in front of me and to the many listening across the wide expanse of the Jewish world. Coming back to earlier lectures, Chaim Schnitzer from Montreal sent me a very interesting picture. Again, I blew it up, but it doesn't come out that well. This is Reb Aaron Kotler with a black beard yet, and this is Shlomo LeKalbach. And they're dancing at a wedding. It has to be when Shlomo still learned in Lakewood. So this picture probably dates back to 51, Mashahu Pazet. But fascinating picture, and I gave many shurim on Shlomo LeKalbach, and it fits in my shurim. You'll find it in one of the 2 years I devoted to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Nachum Lem, my student, not to be confused with Nachum Lem, the third president of Yeshiva University. Nachum Lem, my student, makes a correction. I mentioned Kastner was killed as near the beach in Tel Aviv. I was confusing Kastner with a Lazarov. Kastner was killed near his home. So, there's more to it, in other words, without going into all the details, but the whole trial, you see, he was accused not only of favoring family, which is natural, but he cooperated with the Nazis, he dealt with them, he covered for them, he lied for them, and there's a lot to talk here because he was accused of telling the people everything is going to be okay. In other words, don't rebel, don't cause a scene on the streets. But if you're going to find Kastner guilty on that, you have to deal with the Belzer Rebbe. The same story when the Belzer Rebbe, we're talking about Reb Arela, 44, running away, and he gives that speech where he tells them everything is going to be all right. And everyone who heard that speech basically was killed a few weeks later. And there's a lot written on that, but again, I say, I'll quote Moria Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, in a question I once asked him, which I can't go into now, but I dealt with my Sunday class many years ago, and I've published on it. Gedolei Israel, did you take the Kovna Rav with the Judenrat, with the Gestapo, with giving the names of the Jews who are sick and can't work? You're enabling them to kill Jews. On the other hand, if you don't give the list, instead of killing 100, they would have killed 10,000. So the Rav said, these questions we can't ask. It's when you live it, you just have to act with gut instinct. So let the question hang fire. But I'm aware that there was a lot more to the Kastner trial than what I was interested in for the purpose of this lecture, choosing people to save. Jack sent me, this is written up by Unterman. So I have to tell Jack, I heard the exact same story, but the opposite. What's the story? The two greatest minds of the 20th century were both in Berlin at the same time. My dear colleague, the greatest lady I ever knew, Nechama, we all called her Nechama. Professor Nechama Leibowitz, you've heard the name, I trust. And Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. So people always think, imagine if these two would have met and they would have been a shidduch. So the story I heard was that the Rav was told there's a lady here of Lithuania. She was a Litvak by origin, also, though she already lived in Germany. And the Rav was told there's a lady here that's a giant of Torah. And the Rav went into the library, and there was someone all covered up with books. There were like 10 books piled up in front of her. And they told the Rav, Nechama Leibowitz is sitting there, but he never saw her. So here I get the story written up by Winterman, Yael Winterman, exactly the opposite. That Nechama came into the library and saw the Rav sitting there all covered up with books. But what the truth is, we don't know. But these are anecdotes. What we do know is what I taught in class, that shiur 2 weeks ago on the Rav in Berlin, because I gave you eyewitness testimony. You have to understand, memoir literature does not lie. When someone does a doctorate or someone does research, so you reach your own conclusions. So I don't have to tell you, you can read many books about the Rav. You'll read one book about the Rav, you'll think the Rav was more right-wing than the Baron Cutler. You'll need another book about the Rav. You think the Rav was more open-minded than Moshe Lieberman. You understand? Each one pulls the Rav. There's one guy that got credit that he described the Rav properly. I don't want to mention his name. But I can tell you, he described the Rav because he only quoted from the Rav, every word he wrote. But memoir literature is always honest. Why? It's what you think. In other words, the memoir, you can describe the Rav. That's what I thought of him. So when you're writing about it 1,000 years later, that the people thought of the Rav like this, like that, it's not lying. It's what they thought. That's what makes memoir literature so valuable. It does have a prejudice that has the prejudice of the human being. You follow me, Dov? Each one of us in this class, we have our own prejudice. You understand? We're human beings. If we would think the same way, we go against the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. It's the way God made the world, that everyone is different. And that's what made that memoir literature that I cited so fascinating. Finally, Reb Gedalia Shor's grandson wrote to me, Mark Weinstock, and I thank him for the letter. And he confirmed what I told you in class, something, again, this is a story. And I wrote back to him that it was first told to me by his uncle, Rabbi Louis Yisbe's, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. Rabbi Yisbe taught in Teira Vadas. Afterwards, Rabbi Belkin redeemed him and brought him to Yeshiva University. We taught back-to-back for the 7 years till I went in Aliyah in 69. Rabbi Goldstein, Rabbi Yisbe, Rabbi Scheinberg, we had a whole little chabura there. When YU expanded, they needed more Rashi Yeshiva. There was a new building, more students. So Rabbi Yisbe told me about the letter that Rabbi Aaron Cutler sent to him, to his uncle, to his brother-in-law, Rabbi Yisbe's brother-in-law, Rabbi Gedalia Shor. Don't leave Europe. Stay in Europe. And he told him, but don't tell anyone about the letter because it's embarrassing for Reb Aaron Cutler and his Talmidim. So I never told anyone about the letter, and I knew about it. And then it all surfaced here with the Lo Aleinu, the Machoikis that you see before your eyes today, which is, I don't know, the word Chilul Hashem is not strong enough to describe it. That imagine from Jews with long beards and payas are going to vote for an individual, Berkowitz, who led the fight that the cinemas should be open on Shabbos. I mean, just think what I'm telling you. We're talking about a person who's supported by the New Israel Fund. They invest hundreds of millions of dollars to destroy Israel and to destroy Torah. And this is who many from Jews are going to vote for. Excuse me? But there's nothing to deny. They have proof. But the cinemas, you can't deny. That was Bifneyam V'Eda. So, you know, it's embarrassing, but I didn't say a word. But then, Agudat Yisrael published the letter a number of years ago. It must be fair. It has to be 20 years ago already. When the Homa, let's forget about it. Like this. Anyway, Menachem Weinstein, dear Rebbe, just to clarify one point at the end of Monday Shia, my grandfather, Rav Gedalia Shor, got married in 1938 and went to Kletsk with his wife to learn. As Rebbe said, his father and mother and parents-in-law told him to come back to the USA as soon as possible on the advice of the American consul. This is all absolutely true. Rabbi Aaron Zitzal was in Dacha at the time. Dacha means during the summer, they would leave the big the cities where the yeshiva went. They went with like a forest, like you go up to the Catskills. That's the expression dacha. They use it in Russia today. It's used in when we were in Russia. They spoke about the dachas. That's where they would keep away from the KGB, and they would run camps to teach the kids Aleph Beis. So the interaction with Rav Aharon was via correspondence, which is what I told you. Now, Mark Weinstock says, I asked his son. He did not listen to his Rebbe, and Rav Gedal Yeshua's son answered, it was a dark time, he said, Mot nish gizen alts. We didn't see everything. And I don't want to go into it now, but I dealt with this question in the half year I devoted to Hadas Torah in the Monday class many years ago. This is a very big question with the Holocaust. The Mashgiach was asked, Rav Chetzkel Levenstein was asked, how could Rav Chaim, we're going to come to it today in the Shir, Rav Chaim Moiser make this mistake, and here you would say Rav Aharon Kotler. And the answer is, he answers, it was a dark time, we didn't see everything. The answer is very simple. The Torah says, Hastirat Panai. It doesn't just mean that Rafi and Shimi are going to be stupid. It means even Gadol Yisrael will not truly comprehend. God was doing something that we can't comprehend. A human being cannot understand. That was Reb Chatzkel Levenstein's answer, essentially. And Yitzchak, I may write it up for the next volume. Malka said to me, what are you going to do when this volume is finished? As if I don't have enough on my plate. So I might write up my lectures while my Talmud is working on my halacha lectures. I might write up the Shir Mandas Torah. You follow? So it will be a Melechet Machshava, but maybe we have to do it for Simon's sake. Okay, now let us begin. First of all, we have a very chashuva guest, Rabbi Weinberg, Moshe Tzvi Weinberg, who represents what I was trying to do in the 60s in YU. He is trying to do today. He represents the new generation, and he would be very happy to know in the halacha. And Sunday it's Kulu Halacha Shas Paiskim, response to literature. And I, in either of my classes, haven't repeated a shiur since the Kol began with a formal program in 78, which I'm also responsible for, Mr. Gris, etc. But we'll leave that for another time. And I ended off the shiur yesterday pleading with the Talmidim not to snitch on me to Reb Noach Feinstein or to... what's so funny? Or to Rabbi Yerichon Gerelik, I quoted from Rabbi Nachman Mibreslov on a halachic decision. Then I supported it from a Rebbe in Stern College who also wrote the same thing, La Halacha Lamaisa. So I want to welcome Rabbi Weinberg, and I want to explain to him, you're caught up in a class. I started in the Kollel Shasim Paiskim Shalikim Tshuva at 78. By 1980, the boys asked me to give a second lecture. Whatever you want, Rebbe, you want Hashkafa, they want... Anyway, it began. Now we are in must be the sixth or seventh year already. Maybe Rabbi Rubin can figure it out, on the history of Torah in the United States. And you've come in, we're now dealing with the Bar Hatzalah. So where we ended off last week, I want to pick up, it's a very important shiur today. We ended off last week with the Bar Hatzalah. This period of the late 30s, the early 40s, was a very tension-packed period. Daily, the Bar Hatzalah were getting letters, save us, save us, save us. And as I explained last week, you needed an unquota immigrant visa. You couldn't come to America freely. That ended 1921 with the act that was passed, went into effect in 22. There are quotas on every country in the world now. The East European quota was filled for tens and tens of years to come. It killed Rabbi Revel. And this I can tell you, I'm not saying it because I'm talking about my young cousin, my blood relative, but it killed Rabbi Revel, the aggravation. Imagine getting letters and then turning to the State Department and Mr. Tsar, Dr. Tsar, Dean Tsar, whatever name you knew him by, of Shmuel Leib Zah, he did all the work. He was Revel's right hand. And you're dealing with Gentiles, you're dealing with bureaucracy, you're dealing with some anti-Semites. And this was the aggravation that went on. And Reb Lezer Silva, the head of the Bar Hatzalah, would bother Din Zahar again, would bother Rabbi Revel again. And again, they would say, we're doing whatever we can beyond this. And as Rabbi, as Din Zahar wrote, The truth is, the yeshiva can do no more. To the credit of Rabbi Silverman, this is what I told you, what I'm holding in front of me, everything I'm citing at this part of the shir is from the Suva era. And there you have all the footnotes to know where Rakefet got it from. You don't make this up, you have to have sources. In addition to everything, remember the Rebbe said about Reb Lazer Silver, he was the biggest Goymel Chesed imaginable. And the Rebbe said this many times, including on his Hesped for Reb Lazer, when the convention was held in Cincinnati. Remember I told you, the Agudat Yisrael convention, 1938-39, everyone laughed, I was 39, everyone laughed, Rebbe, who's going to get the Cincinnati? So the Rebbe said, if all the people Reb Lazer did favors for got on the planes, there wouldn't be enough planes going to Cincinnati. So there's a beautiful story here of people working in Brooklyn got a non-quota immigrant visa from Teira Vadas to Reb Elia Chazan. You remember the name, Dov Vic, register with you? He was one of the leading Rashi Yeshiva in Teira Vadas, where Reb Yitzchak Lichtenstein, a YU graduate, is today the Rashi Yeshiva. He was one of the leading lights. So this rabbi in Brooklyn got him an unquote immigrant visa. There was contact with congressmen. You know, New York is New York. The rabbis have influence. Now they needed money to pay for his ticket. And he turns to Reb Lazer Silver. Now, mind you, Reb Lazer didn't know the rabbi in Brooklyn. We don't have the name of the rabbi, by the way. The name was never recorded, but the story was. He didn't know Reb Elia Chazan. He immediately told the rabbi in Brooklyn, turn to this travel agent in Brooklyn, tell him it's my account, you pay half and I pay half. And this rabbi turns to the travel agent, gave him the ticket half price, the other half was billed to Reb Lazer Silver. And you can multiply this endlessly. But then, what came on the scene, and here you come to... if you don't believe in Hashgacha Pratit, there's no way to understand this. Hitler wipes out everybody. Wipes out all the yeshiva are gone. Dumbang the Rashi Yeshiva decimated, killed Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, Avram Gusinski, etc., etc. All right. Everything is wiped out, but Litvakin can reestablish themselves. The proof of the matter is what's going on at this moment in time. A guy named Ani Rothkopf / Aaron Rakefet is teaching in Yeshivas Ribiskol Chanan. Believe me, when I was appointed to the faculty, I didn't know and they didn't know that I'm a cousin of Rabbi Revel. I find that out. Many read the introduction to the fourth edition of Revel. I tell you how I found out. We're Kalvaristis, we're Taka blood relatives, and I may be the only blood relative alive of Rabbi Revel who's still Jewish. You follow? His kids didn't marry. There's a Dov Revel, but he's related. He has the name Dov Revel, as his, like Aaron Yitzchak and Dov Revel, then his last name, Pearl. He's related via Mrs. Revel. But I'm mamash, a blood relative, but no one knew it at the time. But this is Litvakin. Reb Heschel Schechter went back last night. New Reb Heschel. He grew up in Philadelphia, to the Bronx. My brother's Chavruta. I was at a wedding last night. My brother married off a grandson. Reb Heschel, I know him as Heshi, but I'll call him Reb Heschel. And my brother learned together Solanta Yeshiva. MTA. Yeshiva College. Till the day my brother left to go to medical school. Follow? Who, when, where, all right. This is the greatness of the Litvish world. The kid can come from Atlanta and become the Gadol Hadar in Eretz Yisrael. You follow? But the Hasidic world, Hitler wipes you out. You're finished. Rabbi Reuben, can you tell me why? You can't start up Yesh Mayayin. You need yichus. Who are you? What's your yichus? Where do you come from? Who is your elder zayda? Who are your cousins? What's the blood in your vein? You follow me, Yomo? You can't start up. Yomo went to the wedding of the... He became a chassid. He's a column stolen a chassid. All right, beautiful. His description of the wedding was of the Jewish agency holding a conference. Everything was white and blue, he tells me. All right.
Just the curtains,
white and blue.
And the dais.
All right, genug. I don't need more white and blue. I'm a big Zionist, but genug. That's fine, good. The Collins star. So you see what happened here. This is Tashkacha Pratit. The greatest rebellion, you'll take care, Bills. Their entire families basically were totally wiped out. Gare, I think two children out of 11, 12 survived. Bells, nothing. 11 children killed, something like that. A miracle happened. Somehow, they got out, these rebellion. And as they say, the rest is history, and no story shows it more poignantly and dramatically than the Gerer Rebbe. And here, Blaiser was involved, using all his connections. His greatest connection was Senator Taft. You got to remember that Senator Robert Taft, the son of the president, the senator, he was Blaiser Silver's lawyer. If you recall the story I told you, when Reb Blaiser moves to Cincinnati and they build the mikveh in the most beautiful area of Cincinnati and the Plum Street, that area was then the fanciest area, and the Jews there go to court that a mikveh, a public swimming pool, I don't have to tell you, the New York Times goes crazy when another mikveh is built. We're the greatest enemy of the New York Times. They would love to assimilate and intermarry in peace. And a guy like Rakefet is alive telling them they have to be Jews and remember the past and worry about the future. It's the totally antithesis of the Western world and everything you're raised with in the big, beautiful, not so beautiful, spiritually Western world. So they're building a mikveh. So they go to court. Who does Reb Blaiser get? Remember I told you, who represents the Reb Blaiser Silver? Taft, the president's son. The minute Taft walked into court, they dropped the lawsuit. They realized they're finished. There's no way the judge is going to rule against Senator Taft on an issue like this. So this is Reb Blaiser. He went to work, and with the Gerer Rebbe, a number of people played a big role, including the Mashkiach of Yeshivas Reb Yitzchokhanim, of Avram Yitzchok Salmanovich. That's a name that if Morty Tarrigan, if Professor Tarrigan would be here, he'd get up and tell you how his grandchildren are great-great-grandchildren of Rav Avram Yitzchok Salmanovich. One of his daughters is married to a Salmanovich. It's a direct descendant. Rav Avram Yitzchok Salmanovich was a Gerer Chassid. He was extremely close with Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. When Reb Moshe needed to talk with someone and burden himself, it was Rabbi Salmanovich. So it shows you that the Soloveitchik family always had a connection to Chassidus. It's very fascinating. It goes back to Reb Chaim, goes Reb Velvel, Mori Rebbe, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi. There always was a connection there. And Reb Avraham Yitzchok Salmanovich, he already also, he worked with Reb Blaiser Silver. He also had influence. Then in the West Side already, the Upper West Side, was one of the greatest Gaonim of the first half of the 20th century, a name that you all should recognize, Reb Menachem Mendel Kasha, the Torah Shlema. You all familiar with that? I yet had the schut to meet with him twice, but that's it's a different story, it's not for now. Rav Kasha, Kol Raz Lo Anisle, I'm talking from Sefer Denial, there was nothing he didn't know. His Bekiyot. And he was a Gerer Chassid, which, as a Litvak, to me, it's hard to comprehend this. Reb Shlomo Yosef Zevin. Could you imagine he was a Chassid? These guys were Reb Nissen Plushkin. They were bucking in Kala Torah Kulo. They stood before the Rebbe like a Chassid, shaking. This is Chassidus. You have to comprehend it. To me, I'm a Litvak. If I can learn better than someone else, I'll tolerate him. But to shake in front of him, absolutely. All right, I'm a nice guy. I'm not going to put him down. But if he challenges me, I'll open my mouth and lock him into my back pocket and close the pocket and let him suffocate there. That bura maritz, any urefe, pushtak, good for nothing, butlin, etc., etc. But you take a chassid. So Rabbi Nachum Kasha, he also had influence. They rescued the Gera Rebbe, 1940. There's a lot of correspondence. You'll see this in the Vat Hatzalah. And they didn't know where the Gera Rebbe was. They snuck him out of Gur into Warsaw, which was the big city. And they got him out in the nick of time, brought him to Israel. And he came, his entire family outside, I think there were two children left, totally decimated, and comes to Yerushalayim broken, and take a look where Gera is today. You understand? And that's a miracle. It's hard to comprehend it. It's just a miracle. The same story with bells, which nothing to do with the Devar Hatzalah. This is much later, 1944. But the bells of Rebbe comes to Israel, all his children, 11 children, wiped out. No wife. Comes out with his younger brother, who also, his family gone. And they go to Tel Aviv. They dafka went to, if you go to Rehov Arachem in Tel Aviv, you'll see a Hasidish Cheida. That's where the Belza Rebbe lived in Tel Aviv. And his younger brother remarried. Remarried a religious Zionist woman, a survivor. They remarried in 47. And they had a boy in 48 and a girl in 49. And the younger brother died, I think, in 50, 51, you know, when you went through all this. But that boy, that kid born in 48, they pleaded with his mother, the Elter Chassidim, he was about 8, 9 years old, let us take him to Yerushalayim and educate him. You understand? And the mother agreed. You should know, I met the mother. She, a very elegant lady. There was a girl I taught, Machon Gold, who was from that family, and she came to visit her in Machon Gold, and it's an unbelievable story. And this kid turns 18, 1966, and they make a shidduch with him, for him, with the Vishnut Rebbe's daughter. Now try to understand what I'm telling you. This is a kid of 18 years of age. Rafi, how old are you?
20.
How old?
20.
How much would I stand in front of you and ask for a bracha? As much as you're at tzaddik and as much as you want a master kol haTorah kula, you're a young kid yet. At that wedding, first of all, you all know that wedding through a niggun was introduced, written for the wedding. Simin tavo, mazel tavo, mazel tavo, simin tavo. Do you recognize it? Forget my voice, but that niggun was introduced. Chassidim, who survived 80 years old, 90 years old, stood before this kid at the wedding holding a kos and not drinking until the Rebbe gave them a bracha and nodded his head like the Lubavitcher Rebbe used to do, that they can drink from the kos. Do you understand that? That's chassidus. And that kid, the Belzer Rebbe, what he rebuilt was that the Abgebeuter. By the way, in Belz they speak Yiddish. It's interesting. In Ger they speak Hebrew. It's very fascinating. But Belz, the majority of the Belzer are in Europe yet. I was in a home in London where he bought a seat in the big Belza Beit Knesset, which is probably the fanciest, most beautiful shul in the world. And this, not a poor man, second generation. His father was a survivor, conquered England. The centerpiece in his home is the photograph of his seat in the Belza temple. And that's, he gets his hashra'ah from there, his inspiration. Understand, this is chassidus. And there, had these rebbeim not survived? No, with all the respect that Moshe Weinberger started Yesh Mayayim, the Mekadshe, I'm talking Woodmere, unbelievable. But that's already neo-chassidus. The real continuity, Belz, Gur, care in Yiddish, Lubavitch, Vishnitz, the branches of Sadagura, but Sadagura already, part of them were in America. You followed Biyana and the others were in America. The Majidster got out to America at this point. But what a miracle. And here too, the Vad Hatzala played a role. But now we come to the heart of today's lecture. With all that was said and done, the Rabbonim in America, I remember we spoke about this last week, if I'm going to give tzedakah, shimi, I choose who to give tzedakah to. It's my money. If I have trumah to give to a kohen can't come and rob it from me. I can choose the kohen. The Rabbanim in America at this point, Agudas HaRabbanim, what we've been speaking about for 2 years already, Agudas Rabbanim was 90% plus Litvakim. They had all studied in Slabatka, in Mir, in Rotten, in Telz, and their foremost interest was in saving the yeshivat. And here, as we mentioned, the yeshiva had all gone to Vilna. They gathered around Rav Chaim Moshe Grishinsky. Now, this becomes very, very important, as you will see. Rav Chaim Moshe Grishinsky, it's not Delitvakin, it's not a Chassid Rebbe relationship. But nevertheless, I'd have to go further. You look at someone like myself, and some people listening have studied that Yitzchak has been in the Shia. How many years already, Yitzchak?
20th year.
20th year, Kanayin Hara. And some people have studied me 20 years, 30 years, you know, the tapes. I used to send tapes to America, or my Talmidim. I'm not a chassid. But sometimes, I always say, if the Rav were only alive, we wouldn't have these problems. Of course, the Rav commanded such respect that if we had a, let's say, an issue, we'll say women dancing with a Sefer Torah on Simchas Torah, if the Rav gave an opinion, gave a psak, you didn't differ with him. You accepted it, whether you were right-wing, left-wing, centrist, those words didn't apply. Rav Chaim Moshe was like the Rav to the second power, the third power. People felt he's the magnet. He knows what he's doing. He will save us. And now, with the independence of Lithuania, it became all the more important. These rabbis have poured into Lithuania, the yeshiva have poured into Lithuania. It became all the more important to save the yeshiva. Now, how do you save the yeshiva? And here we get involved with human reality. Adam Karev et Salatzmo. If someone hits me, I'm going to feel bad for myself. If I'm bleeding, it doesn't bother me what's going on elsewhere. I'm concerned my finger is bleeding. We can't. This is a human being. This is human nature. A lot of the Rabbanim in America, some wanted, let's do what we can for Mir. I come from Mir. I come from Slobodka. The Rebbeim in Europe reached the conclusion, work to save everyone. Don't choose. We are all in the same boat, and the future of Litvische Tera depends upon us. Don't discriminate. And we have letters. This you see, I quote, and afterwards Ephraim Zurov quotes, Dr. Zurov quotes. You have letters from Baron Cutler, from Europe, from other Rashi Yeshiva. Don't give a preference, work to save all of us. And there were people getting a visa, you needed money, they were working, they were trying, they were raising money, like I told you, Rebellia Chazan, and they were buying tickets. The Vad Hatzala was doing what it could. Money became a real problem. Let me explain why. I'm not the expert on money that Jack Levinstein is. He's right. You were a stockbroker. What did you do in Toronto?
I was an economist.
An economist. Okay. Baruch Hashem. He had the misfortune. Someone told him, what year was it that they said to you, Jack, you're going to Israel for a year. What are you going to do? And you say, I'm going to look for good shayurim. And some dummy says to you, go into Rabbi Rakefet Shir, and as they say, the rest is history. Vic had the misfortune. He heard me speak in Flatbush. and he vowed he's taking early retirement, coming in Aliyah, and the rest, as they say, is history. So, all right, you're an economist. When the stock market is flourishing, you're going to give stock up. Simon invested in the stock market a year ago. He put $100 in. It took off. They sold out, the buyout, whatnot, high tech. That $100 is worth $2,000 today. So he gives away $500. But you see, in 1940, what happens when war clouds are gathering, people are not so generous. The stock market is not taking off, number one. Number two, even if the stock market remains firm, what will be tomorrow? Life always works that way. What will be tomorrow? Yitzchak, where were you November 22nd, 1963? Do I have the right year?
Yes.
When Kennedy was assassinated. Where were you? Were you in the rabbinate yet? Were you in the chaplaincy? Where were you? I was in the rabbinate. And I had stockbrokers in my shoe, maybe with South Orange. They didn't have a Shabbos. One of them was a very firm guy. They were shaking, literally shaking. Remember, they closed down the stock market till Tuesday, I think it was. The funeral was when? Monday, I believe. I remember it was unbelievable what we went through. And why did this? They were shaking. What will be tomorrow? Who's going to buy stocks? What a terrible moment. America's going under. The president is assassinated. Levinstein, the Mashkiach of Panovich, I'll never forget his shmuis, that Verhotoske Kent Laban, who could have believed this? If someone would tell you, the President of the United States is assassinated, you can't believe it. All right, in Russia they can kill, in place in China they can kill. In America, all right, it's a different America today. Today you're lucky if a week goes by and people aren't shut up because of morons walking the streets. But who could believe it? So money was very hard to come by. And the heartache of the Rabbanim in America raising money, being Mechalel Shabbos. Remember we spoke about that with the cars, the taking taxis. They were desperate. People got visas. You got to get them out immediately. The Rabbanim in America paskin that you have to be Mechalel Shabbos. You don't wait a minute. And they took taxis into Flatbush on Shabbos. And Mr. Irvin Bunim got out of the taxi. And people gave. They saw Chilul Shabbos ad kedei kach. But everything centered around Reb Chaim Eisen. In the middle of all this, August of 1940, Reb Chaim Eisen is very ill with cancer, and he dies. In the last days of his life, the Talmidim pleaded with him. He's writing to Reb Lezer Silva, and they plead with him, Rebbe, shren sich nishton, you can't do such hard work, you're not feeling well. We'll write the letter for you. This is documented. Reb Chaim Eisen answers, no, it's no good. Let Reb Lezer Silva see my handwriting. It'll have a greater impact on him. And Reb Chaim Oza dies. Now, I have to tell you something. When you look back and you see what happens, and I'll explain it in a moment, had he not died, we may not be sitting here. Does anyone catch what I'm saying? There was, the Ribbono Shel Olam called him in. There may very well be, it's unbelievable, in the tragedy, it saves Torah. And what am I talking about? At this point already, the giant of salvation, Senpo Sugihara, Zeichet Tzadik Lebracha, the Japanese consul to Kovna, the idea of writing these visas, Jews can go into Curacao. They don't need a visa to get in. It's open to them, owned by the Dutch. They have to get out of Russia. They have to go through Japan. Let's let them into Japan. And he starts writing these visas. And you all know the story, and I don't want to go into detail. You can go on to Wikipedia, you can read Krenzler's book, you can read the books about Senpo Sugihara. It's an unbelievable story, because the whole thing was a farce to begin with. It wasn't real, but what a story. Now the young man, you're 20 years of age. Shimmy, you're learning in Mir, you're learning in Slabatka. You're in Tells, Rotten, you're in Vilna now. Can you make a decision like that, 20 years of age? I mean, here in Israel, kids 20, unfortunately, can make these decisions, because at the age of 18 already, at the age of 13, I saw my grandsons grow up. All they're talking about is how they're going to do the army. You follow? And which hezda will they do? And I've had grandsons hezdas all the way from down south all the way up north. From Nahariya all the way to Dimona, I think it's located. Or Yeruchim. Wow. And everything in between. So, you know, when you've got life and death situations, and you know this morning how bad the news is, a lieutenant colonel was killed in battle just last night. In Gaza, they haven't really, I don't know if they're going to release the name because it was a very secret unit of the army, but they did say he was a Skanaluf, which tells you there's a very high rank already. To be killed in battle of Skanaluf tells you something. So kids can make this decision, but yeshiva boys there in Vilna didn't know what to do. And the debate raged. Should we take advantage of Senpo Sugihara or stay put? What was the machlokes? Here, you have a young man sitting here whose father and uncle went through this entire debate. Had they made the wrong choice, you wouldn't be hit off. Right or wrong? Black and white. You're a mismach of YU. The whole thing, you wouldn't be here, period. What was the debate? Vilna was independent for a few months, but they're still independent now. Stay put. You're going to go travel through the communist Russia hating religion. I don't think there were anti-Semites in Russia. Very minimal. Even today, much less anti-Semitism in Russia than in the United States. Yeah, statistics show it. You reread. Incidents was just published. They hated religion altogether. And why the communists hated the Rav always raised the issue. There was no need for communism to hate religion. You can be a good communist and be religious. One doesn't contradict the other. But the reality was they hated religion. It was a basis of the communist system. They blamed the Tsar's priests for inculcating the masses with for being obedient to the Tsar. And it worked against the freedom of man, the freedom of the working man, the brotherhood, universal brother, everything that communism stood for, the Soviet man. They hated religion. You're going to go travel from Vilna to Moscow, take the train to Vladivostok. How do you pronounce it?
Vladivostok,
thank you. And take the boat to Japan? Are you crazy? It's illogical. Zerik Vahavtik in his memoir. We spoke about Rabbi Dr. Vahavtik, remember? Member of the Knesset for many, many years. Sahad Atat, big Talmud Chacham. The son of the Divrei Yeruchim, I think it was called. The street is named after his father by the name of the Sefer in Bayit Vagan. And he's pleaded people, get out. Grab it. We have a chance. No good to remain here. Many students, and it could be your father and uncle as well, went to Rav Chaim Moshe, and Rav Chaim Moshe said, stay put. You don't put yourself in such danger. And remember what I told you, the memoir literature stresses it time and again. They knew it was innate Sarah Liakov. But as Vahaftik wrote, we thought it'd be like the Crusades, like the Chmelnytsky massacres. All right, a few thousand Jews will be killed, 10,000 Jews will be killed, but we'll survive. No one ever dreamt in 40, 41 what Hitler had in mind and what Hitler was able to do, abetted and aided by the entire world. Forget about England and the white paper, the United States, the state, they refused to bomb the railroad lines to Auschwitz. We know that. So much has been written on it. No one. Stay put. With Rav Chaim Moshe's death, and now I want to record something that these ears heard. And future historians, you can cite me if you do research on this period. Of all my rebellion, at my early juncture in life, when I told you in 7th grade I come back to Solanta, and here I am, an American third generation kid, dreaming of Joe DiMaggio and the Yankees. I don't speak a word of Yiddish, and my Rebbe doesn't speak a word of English. Of all my rebellion, I became very, very close to Rav Chenoch Fishman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. How many of you remember him from the yeshiva? Yitzchak, you do dove in your time already? He wasn't there, right? Rav Chenoch, I was a ben bayit in his house. His eldest son, Rav Heshi, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. I remember I told you this year, last year, 2 years ago, 10 years ago, one day I came home to Rav Chenoch, and I said, Rebbe, you have gemach for my son an Americana hayom. I made your son into an American today. I took him to his first ball game at Yankee Stadium. And Rav Chenoch was pleased. What can I tell you? It's a world gone by. So Rav Chenoch told me something. As a kid, I was very interested in this, because I didn't know I'm related to Rabbi Revel and I have Yichis. I figured I'm an American kid and nothing and nobody. My parents born in Holland. There was It's true, one set of grandparents, my Zayda and Baba and my father's side, were never Machalos Shabbos in America. But they knew nothing. And my other Zayda and Baba, my Zayda learned in the Lashon. He could quote Gemaras by heart. And my Baba, who was Revel's cousin, she was a Kalvariski. And I never paid attention who, what, when, where. But they already, Shabbos didn't exist. Kashrut sheet, the home was kosher. You figure who, what, when, where. And I was interested. What happened? So Rav Chenoch, we were discussing this issue. And mind you, I'm a kid, but I had seichel. And he told me the following. He said, I'm saying it in English, but living it in Yiddish. When Rav Chaim Moshe died, we knew we were finished. We had to get out. See, his death, it's like, Kolzman, he was alive. We figured the Gadol Hador, he will sustain us. With his death, we knew there was no hope. And that's when we said, we got to take the risk, that Chabura. We have to take the risk and go via Moscow, sail to Japan, and let the Ribbono Shel Olam take over. And now you think back, had Rav Chaim Moshe lived another few months, no one would have gotten out. Because what happens is, the Germans come in, they conquer, and the truth of the matter is, I've told you this many times, it's one of the saddest outfalls of Machlokes, of Halacha. You have to live Acharei Rabim Lahatot. I have very strong opinions on every topic. I'm not an idiot. I've lived and what I have seen in my life, not many of you have seen or will ever see. Imagine, I grew up here, the Bronx, this, that, Israel, the army fought in two wars, the Mossad, communist Russia, what I've seen in my life. If there's a decision you have to follow. You think you're the smartest guy in the world? Fine. But there are other people as smart as you. And the Torah taught us, Acharei Rabbim Lahatot, learn Masechet Sanhedrin, learn Hilchot Sanhedrin of the Rambam, learn the way Beitin describes the sides. And you see, in getting out, Reb Chaim Moshe dies in August. You got to get out immediately. No one knows what the Mara will bring, and it brought terrible news, the Nazis. And Yom Kippur's coming. And that's what I lectured on in the Kolo about 30 years ago. I have a big Dr. Gvirtz always reminds me of my lectures on International Bait Line. At times we got questions here, so David Rabbi Miller would say, I can't answer this, but we have an expert here. I'll ask Rabbi Kefir to answer your question. International Bait Line, not an easy problem to deal with. When do you observe Yom Kippur? And they finally gave a psak here, Rav Herzog and Rav Tukachinsky, the Godayim of Shabaretz.
In Kobe, Japan.
Talking beyond the deadline in Japan, in Kobe. They were going to be in Kobe, and Chazon Ish wouldn't accept the psak. And many of the students were chayshesh. We don't want to be in a position to observe 2 days of Yom Kippur. It fell that year, Shabbos and Sunday. And the whole machlokes, is it Shabbos, is it Sunday, is it past the deadline, isn't it past the deadline, how does the deadline work, how do you count, do you go according to the local community? And those students who were tzaddikim and said, we'll go after Sukkot. Let's spend the last holidays al admat, the country we know, the country that we feel at home in. Then we'll go on. They never got out. They perished. It's an unbelievable story. There's more to the story too. And you see the hashgacha here, that the human mind cannot comprehend what is good and what is bad. And this all comes up in the memoir literature 1,000 times over, not 100 times over. When the communists came in, occasionally they plucked up some Jews. We don't want you near the border. We're going to be fighting the Nazis. We don't want you near the border. We don't trust you. You're Jews. You're a fifth column. Where did they send them? Siberia. And you read the memoir literature, people were crying. They're going to Siberia and they're leaving their friends behind. You know, 4 years later, anyone who survived the cold in Siberia survived the war. The Chibina Rav is a prime example. Rav Wiedenfeld. Oh, Beresh Wiedenfeld, Gon Shebegainim, lived not far from here in Shari Chesed. In his building, there, I don't know if it's still active, there's a mikveh, there was a mikveh downstairs in the building, built for him. The Chibina Rav, Gon Adia. And he went to Siberia. And they were worried, who knows, if you survived, you survived. There's memoir literature, Shapiro, what was his first name? Chaim Shapiro, Zichrono Levrach, ultimately in Baltimore. Fine, it's fine. He wound up in Baltimore. He survived in Siberia. And those who were left behind, the Nazis came in and decimated them. Now, coming back to Reb Chaim Moshe's Patira, let me add a few words. Under communist rule, you were not allowed to gather together in public, to have public assemblies, public protests. They were always worried that people would try to overthrow the regime. Later, you know, the only time the communists came together were officially in the Kremlin when they celebrated Lenin's birthday and they celebrated Russia's independence and ultimately Russia's victory in World War II. Then millions came in. If you ever wanted to see a Rishut HaRabim, the Oraita, it's the Kremlin. If you go to the Kremlin and you see, it's a Rishut HaRabim, the Oraita. Red Square, whatever you call it. Red Square, correct. Am I right? What's it called? Red Square, correct. Right near the Kremlin wall, oh, that area. I said Kriyat Shema there in all my visits. But the third time already, it was easy to do. 1989, the war, it was the world was changing there. And the Mamash Rishita Rabin, so the funeral of Chaim Olza, everyone turned out. Tens of thousands of Jews in public. Not only that, during the funeral, all the stores closed down, Jew and Gentile. And until today, if you go to Vilna, you can stop any non-Jew on the street who's over 70, 80. I remember when I was there in Vilna in 89, you could stop any non-Jew over 40. They could all show you where Reb Chaim Olza lived. I have a picture. It was a little building. He was on the second floor, one flight up. The shul where he davened was the only shul that survived the Holocaust. Every other shul was wiped out. When the Baal Tshuva movement began in Russia, one of the first things they did in the shul in Vilna, they rebuilt the mikveh. There was a mikveh downstairs. Obviously, with the war and all that happened and communism, no mikveh was allowed. Later, that mikveh was rebuilt. And it was downstairs. Not like Reb Moshe's tshuva. If you recall, Reb Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, one of his early volumes of there, Lo Aleinu, where I think it was from Minsk, that they wanted to build the mikveh in the ladies' section in the shul. It's the only place they could build it, keep it a secret. The regime should not know. And Reb Moshe was mata to build it in the shul so that husband and wife could continue the Jewish people. A very moving tshuva reflecting the reality of what we have gone through and giving us a lot of reason to be very thankful for where we're at today. 1 million Jews in Russia just dedicated a new synagogue, a tremendous shul. What's the name of the city, Yomo? Kaliningrad?
But Königsberg.
And it was called Königsberg originally. It's part of Russia near Germany. And they just dedicated Chabad is all over the place. And Rakefet is a tremendous Litvak. But if anyone ever says a bad word about Chabad in my presence, I will smack his face and charge him for seltzer. I don't want to tell you what I would do to him beyond that. But charge him for seltzer. One other word about the funeral. And this is sad. Reb Chaim Olza was buried in Schnippishtuk. Schnippishtuk was a suburb of Vilna where they had a tremendous cemetery where Gedolei Yisrael were buried. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of graves, including the Vilna Gaon. Yisrael Klausner, the great uncle of our late student, who I still can't make my peace with his death, Rav Yosef Klausner. Yisrael Klausner wrote an entire volume in the mid-30s, must be 35, 36, on the cemetery in Vilna. And he takes you, he takes you through the cemetery, shows you which line here, there, which grave, there's a whole map. Gedolei Yisrael charted out. Following World War II, the communists took over Lithuania. It became part of the glorious Soviet socialist empire. And that cemetery, Lo Aleinu, was plowed over. It has the largest soccer stadium in Lithuania today. Under that stadium are hundreds of thousands of Jews, including Gedolei Yisrael, whose Sfarim we use daily. The gesture they did, because of pressure, and there might have been some communists who were Jews who still had feeling, that also turns up in memoir literature, that you go into these big communists, they close the door, And they asked this Chabadnik. I have it in my new book coming out. This is it's going to be in the new book. You'll see. And this guy is shaking, this big communist, a big lady, a big commissar with that, blah, 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 blah. And she asks him for a 20 kilo of matzah for Pesach for her family, but not to tell anyone. The true story, I documented. So it could be that they had a little feeling, so they did allow the Jews to rebury the Vilna Gaon and his immediate family and Reb Chaim Moisa and his wife. And when you go to Vilna today, you see pictures. I think there's a picture there are pictures in Washington where I'm standing at the Vilna Gaon's grave davening and where I'm at Reb Chaim Moisa. I have a picture of Reb Chaim Moisa's grave. But that's reinterred. It's not the original interment. It's reinterred. And today, it's become a tourist attraction. It works to the welfare of Vilna. I'll add another postscript, very sadly, but in Yonah D'Yoma. And this also comes out in the next volume. Remember I told you when my volume on From Washington Up to Washington Street was being edited for publication, the people dealing with it felt it would be too many pages. They didn't want it to be more than 500 pages. So they edited out two chapters on my work in Russia, my wife, myself. They telescoped them into one chapter, but a lot of material got left out. It always troubled me because these are names of people who risked their lives. And today, they're in the dustbin of history. Let the story be told. So in this new volume, it's the second section. There are four sections in this volume. This is section two. So I tell the whole story. One second, I lost my trend of thought. I was talking, what was I talking about a half second ago? I know. So the first time we were, I said, in Yonah D'Yoma, I'm with you, I'm back with it. Bear with me. In Yonah D'Yoma, it's very sad for me to say this, but it should be said. When we came to Moscow the first time, remember, I'm the first one now, the Mossad has tapped me on the shoulder, I'm being appointed the liaison to the Baal Tshuva community. Remember, there was always Chabad in Russia, Zeluchud v'Zeluchud, but these Baal Tshuva were not Chabad, and they needed Litvish, they wanted Gemara, they wanted YU, I can tell you. So I come, Malka and I come to Moscow, January 1981. All right, there's now a big handful of Baal Tshuva. They're all friends, they're all talking with each other. When we come back in 85, I knew that we had succeeded. Yitzchak, can you tell me why? Unbelievable machlekes between the groups of Baal Tshuva in Moscow. Right. Not for now to go into the names. There was the Essas group, the Polanski group, the Shifrin group. They were in the middle. Oh my gosh, machlekes. Vilna is practically the only city I know of in contemporary Russia where there's machlekes today. In Vilna, between the Litvish element and the Hasidish element. Vilna. Deep machlekes. Moscow, Chabad, massive. A nice, strong Litvish bastion. I've raised a lot of money for them. Shvat Amim. No machlekes. Free to choose. I've yet to meet anyone who went both to the Shvat Ami based Medrash and goes to Chabad. But you're free to choose. So, man, free world. What appeals to you? What speaks to you? But Vilna, machlekes. Leningrad, Shvat Ami doesn't go into, because that city is Kulo Chabad. That's where the Rebbe went to jail. It all begins. Yutet Kislev is in Leningrad. You follow me, Shimi? Chabad owns the city. We don't have to As long as good Jews come out, we're the happiest people alive. Then there are many other cities where there's Chabad, there's Shvatami, Baruch Hashem. Vilna Machlekes. And unfortunately, Vilna follows the example of Medinat Yisrael. And we have to work very hard to bring home the message that the Rav inculcated with us with. What is Torah about? It's the picture you draw of your life. Your picture is your individual picture. The colors, the configuration are very different. Rafi, you have one picture, Shimi has another. The framework has to be made out of steel. The Vahashem Zuhalacha. There you accept with joy all Malchut Shamayim. Yoke of heaven. And the Rav used to say, why do you need that word, yoke? All? You accept with joy, Malchut Shamayim. Accept with joy, Malchut Shamayim. Look around at son of our brethren. Shabbos is too hard. What's wrong with turning on a light? Kashrut, I'm traveling. All right, I'm having milk. So they boil pork in here last night. What's the difference? Taret Mishpacha. To be sexually free. Don't want to go further. Wow. Oh, it's a yoke. We are Torah Jews. But the picture? Chassidus, Litvish, Yekish. Freedom of choice. Halavai, you should take the best out of all, and the picture should be sparkling with beautiful colors. Coming back here, Machlaikis. Devar Hatzalah, and this period. Akudat Yisrael is on the scene. Now look back at America. America, till 1937, every last Rav, every last Jew was a Mizrachiite. Yes. There was Rav Brzezinski, Rav Chaim Moshe's cousin in Nebraska. Rav HaMachshev, a big slaughter. He's a gonadir. I still met people who knew him when he moved to Brooklyn in his later years. He knew every Tosfos in Shas by heart. Photographic memory. He was an agudist. There were a few, the Malachim. Remember we lectured, I never gave shirim that attracted more attention around the world than my shirim on the Malachim. There were Malachim, yeah, my wife's family. Half of them were Malachim. My wife's cousins were friendly sons. They descend from Malachim. S-O-H-N. If you meet a son, it's my relative. By the way, Vic knows the family very well. They were neighbors on the Lower East Side. And part of them were Malachim. But 98% of American Jewry, Rabbanim Gedolei Yisrael, Rosh Yeshiva, the Mechita Ilu Yisrael, was 100% Mizrachiite. That's why he had to leave Europe. He was from Lida, from Torah Vadasim, Lida, from Rav Reines. Now in America, Rav Lezer Silver, everything we spoke about, and the refugees pouring in, hey, there are a lot of Agudistim there. And remember, this was a period when Mizrachi and Aguda fought each other, black and white. If you were a Mizrachiite, the dream, a state of Israel. If you were an Agudist, no. What did Aguda describe in 1919? No Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel before Mashiach Tzidkenu. There was real tension here. So this tension, it part of the Vat Hatzalah scene. The Mizrahi was worried, we're losing power. Shifting gears. Worse than that, what did we say last week? When you're going to save people, you have to make a decision. Mi yichyeh u'mi yamus. You have to make a decision. You have no choice. You can't save everybody. 1, 10, 100. Forget about 10,000. The Mizrahi element is worried. And here there was a lot of pressure, labriyot, expand the var hatzalah. And here again, you got to give Reb Lazer Silva credit. His unique personality. Agud is my older sister, Mizrahi is my younger sister, quote unquote. We've spoken about it. He insisted that there be no politics. Var Hatzalah has to work for everyone. And by now, they're starting to hear rumors of what's happening in Europe. We have to save as many Jews as possible. The color of their skin or ideology is not important. What he did do, he expanded the presidium of the Var Hatzalah. And here, Reb Lazer Silva was joined by two famous Mizrahi Rabbanim. One name that we mentioned, Reb Yosef Kanvich from Newark, who at one point knocked Reb Lazer Silva out as president of the Agudas HaRabbanim. There was one brief period where he was the president. Who was Reb Yosef Kanvich? The son-in-law of the Ridbaz. He was the son-in-law of Reb Yaakov David Ben Zev Volovsky, the famous Ridbaz. Make believe you know who the Ridbaz was. Shimi, do you know? Get hold of Rakafot Aharon, either Chelik Aleph or Chelik Bet. Postdoctoral research on the Ridbaz that I published in a very prestigious publication. I actually won a prize. Best postdoctoral research than that on a Jewish topic, etc. You'll find out who the Ridbaz was. Reb Yosef Kanvich was his son-in-law. The other addition was a very well-known rabbi from Brooklyn, Rav Yaakov Levinson. Rav Yaakov Levinson. He was president of the Mizrahi. Did you remember? I taught his, I think it was children. It could be children, if not grandchildren. It's in the 70s. I remember Makom Gold. I had a Levinson, and she was probably a granddaughter. By 1970, it had to be a wonderful, wonderful. Today, she must be a great grandmother. But I taught her when she was your age, 20, 21, and wonderful. They joined. And what was accomplished with unity. Now, let me go one step further. All this takes a interesting turn with one individual who we've spoken about in many different contexts. There is no question if you list out the five greatest individuals who came to America and changed the American Torah scene, he is right up there, and that is Reb Aaron Cutler. 1941, and I mentioned this last week, the Var Hatzalah succeeds with Breckinridge, with the State Department. They're willing to let in some Rashi Yeshiva, and they get a visa. And they ask Reb Lazer, what name do we fill in? Who do we send it to? Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, she'hakol nehyeh bidvaro. What name do we send it to? And Reb Lazer asked the Europeisha, and they all answer Reb Aaron Cutler. I told you why. Why Reb Aaron Cutler? He wasn't the most famous. He was only in his late 40s. There were Rashi Yeshiva names known throughout the world in their 60s and 70s. But everyone felt Reb Aaron Cutler was young yet with energy. You understand? I know my age and I know my limits. I know my energy. Baruch Hashem, you got to know in Yiddish, you have to know how to use your strength. Reb Aaron was burning with energy. And they all felt if Reb Aaron will get to America, it will help all of us. The minute Reb Aaron got to America, he lands in San Francisco, he comes cross country, wherever the train stops, the local Rabbanim go out to save it, to meet him, to see Reb Aaron, Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva, wherever they're from Jews, He finally reaches New York. I have the exact dates in silver. You'll see before Pesach. 41, Reb Baran throws himself entirely into Hatzalah. 41, 42. No talk of teaching, no talk of a yeshiva. Reb Aaron 724 is haunted. I quote speeches he gave, but I'm paraphrasing them. Haunted by all the Talmidim, all his children, as he calls them, that are left behind in Vilna. And we got to do everything we can. And Reb Baran becomes very active in the Vat Hatzalah. And I've heard this from people who lived it, were part of it. Everyone deferred to Reb Baran. Reb Baran Cutler, Kletzker, a Shishiva, was in Vilna, saw what was going on. He's now here. There was never a decision made by Vat Hatzalah in 41-42 that Reb Baran would disagree with. He had veto power. We can put it that way. There were problems. I'm not overlooking what with Chabad, but quote Hashem, we don't have to go into it now. We've alluded to it in the past. But he became dominant. Let me come back to my dear student, Rav Yosef Klausner, Zichrona Levracha, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. It hurts, a young man. Did you know Rabbi Klausner? You know Klausner. So the Klaus's mother, Stefanski, she came from a Rabbanisha family. Her brother was a great Talmud Chacham. He published endless Sfarim on Minhag Eretz Yisrael. If you go to Mossad Rav Kook, when they have a book sale after Pesach, after Sukkot, you can get the books of her brother. Her father was a Rav. She was the secretary of the Vat Hatzalah. And she was equally competent in English, Yiddish, Hebrew. So whatever language was spoken, whatever letter had to be written, whatever language had to be utilized, she was there. And this was the connection. During this period, with Reb Aaron, they brought over more Gedolei Yisrael from Kobe, Japan. Names that you should all recognize: Reb Moshe Shatzkis, Lumjerov, Zeman Gerata, but they saved him. This is 41. Reb Aaron in America, they brought over Reb Moshe Shatzkis. Reb Moshe Shatzkis came Brooklyn, Yeshiva University. Lived in Williamsburg, taught at the yeshiva, found his place. He was older. The Rav revered him. And he, the Rav, and Rabbi Belkin, they formed the committee that granted you smicha at the yeshiva. The Bechina was with these three individuals. Rabbi Belkin's role was to calm down the Rav and mediate between the Rav and Rav Shatzkis. And these were oral bechinas which, thank God, ended right before Yitzchak and I had to get smicha. Then it was only written bechinas that began at 9 o'clock in the morning and you would finish 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Aaron marked them for the Rav. That is correct. Aaron marked them for the Rav. You got two grades. One grade like a 90, and the other grade an Aleph, a Bet, for Havana. In other words, it's knowing knowledge, but how you present it. So knowing the knowledge was, I have my Bechin that I can bring them into you. You get a 90. But Havana, if you got an Aleph in Havana from Abraham Lichtenstein, you dance the Kazatska. But that was Reb Moshe Shatzkis. The other person they brought over at that time was Reb David Lifshitz, the Tzuvaka Rav. And Reb David Lifshitz, he didn't have it, it wasn't as glatt, as simple. I'm using Yiddish because I'm thinking in Yiddish. He didn't have it as simple as Reb Moshe Shatzkis. He went to Chicago. And had he remained in Chicago, Stokey, as we call it today, but then the Hebrew college had a fancy word for it. Skokie, as we call it today, Hebrew Theological College, right, HTC, Skokie, as we call it today, might have had a much better history, because they never had a dominant personality. Why? In 44, Rabbi Belkin became president of the yeshiva. He was elected at the end of 43, and in 44 he was running the yeshiva, and Rabbi Belkin had a dream to bring in tremendous litvisha koach into the yeshiva. So in 44, he brought in the mashgiach, who was up in the Boston area, was a rav, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessen. He was in Switzerland. Dr. Belkin brought him in. He was very close to the rav in the Boston area.
He was in Chelsea.
He was in Chelsea, and Rabbi Belkin brought him in. What happened was, when the World War broke out, he was in Switzerland fundraising for the Slabodka Kollel LaHoraah, which he was one of those. He was a shtat rav, knew how to paskin, was a bal musa, and he was saved. His family, his wife was killed, and some of his children. But the other children, and he was in Switzerland, he got to America, he was saved. So Rabbi Belkin brought him in to be mashgiach, and at the same time, he turned to Reb David Lifshitz in Chicago, come to the yeshiva. And he brought them into YU. And all this was Reb Aaron, all this was during this period, 41, a little bit 42, when they could still save people. Unfortunately, this window, chalon, as we say in modern Hebrew, this window completely closes down by the middle of 42. And that's when Reb Aaron realizes the Hatzalah, there's not much more you can do. He still was involved, but you can leave it to others. It's saving every Jew, not just the yeshiva boys, not just his children, and really little can be done. And that's where the little nucleus of survivors who from the Litvish yeshiva, and a few American kids, Reb Aaron gives a talk on a shul on the Lower East Side, and the memoir literature is filled with the impact that talk made. Europe is being destroyed. There's no more Torah learning. The literature world is gone. The yeshivat are shut. If we don't do something in America, there will be no tomorrow. And there was a little attempt in White Plains, Reb Mendel Zaks. It didn't really take off. And with that nucleus, 13 or 14 individuals, some of whom I knew personally, Reb Aaron chooses Lakewood, away from the crowd, away from the big city, like Slabodka is a suburb of Kovna, Lakewood, far away from New York, far away from Philadelphia, and yet Lakewood has the advantage during the summer, during the winter, when people wanted to run away from the cold, it's before everyone runs to Florida. Today, Florida becomes New York during the winter. But then you took the bus, an hour and a half, an hour, three quarters. You're in Lakewood, it was 10 degrees warmer than New York City. So it's a resort town. There were kosher hotels there. You could raise funds there when the people came to the kosher hotels. That's how Reb Aaron chooses Lakewood, and that's how Lakewood begins. Finally, how does all this material affect this very building, this very structure? How does it affect Rafi and Shimi right up front in their faces, their eyes, their nose? Ah, gentlemen, put two and two together. There was a kid growing up in the Midwest. His father was a sheikh, an astra of a chassid. Kid's name was Moshe Horowitz. Father sent him, I said, Midwest. He went to Chicago, studied with Reb David Lifshitz. Reb David convinced him, you got to go on to New York, you have to study in the big yeshivat. And he came from a very Hasidic background, right-wing background. So Moshe, your age, comes to New York, to study a Torah Vedas with Rav Shlomo Hyman. Remember we spoke about Rav Shlomo Hyman? Rav Shlomo Hyman dies. So he decides, I'll go to Reitz, what's going to become YU. Rav David Lifshitz is there, my Rebbe from Chicago. Let me join him in Reitz, what they called the Uptown. And Moshe Horowitz, known to everyone as Whitey, there were two brothers, Blackie and Whitey. One had a darker beard and one had a lighter beard, almost blonde. Whitey decides he goes to YU, studies with the Rav, goes into Chinuch, teaches for the Rav in Maimonides in Boston. Dr. Tova Lichtenstein, the Rav's daughter, was a student, I forget in what grade, but Whitey always would tell me, I taught Tova. And then he goes to Washington and he runs the day school, but he's always flirting with the idea of coming an Aliyah. This is the future. And in 1968, he comes an Aliyah. He is hired as the first dean of students of a school that's formed in 68. Give me the name! It's right next door. Machon Lev, a little building in Bayit Vagan, a handful of students. He's the dean. But the Jewish agency, Torah culture departments, before the Reforming Conservative took over, had a dream. We have to export Torah to the Anglo world. After the Six-Day War, all eyes are upon Israel. And in 1969, right after Sukkot, a school begins that changes the history of Anglo-Torah world. It is called Beit Medrash LaTorah. Whitey named it after the Hebrew name of the Chicago Yeshiva. It was called Beit Medrash LaTorah, not Hebrew Theological College in Hebrew. And he named the school BMT. And the voice you hear is the sole survivor, Aricha Jamam Tovim, of the original BMT faculty. And we changed the course of Anglo-Torah history. And that's what we're talking about. Reb David Lifshitz, New York, Reb Moshe Horowitz, wow, BMT, this building, originally who'd I get it for? BMT, but Mr. Gris wanted YU, so for the first few years, BMT had the building for nothing. YU wasn't interested in starting anything real here. They were caught up in financial problems in New York. Where you're sitting is the result of BMT. My dear students, allow me to reiterate. So, Rav Moshe Tzvi, let me explain to you. I like the Rav. I start, what did I do last week? Basabach to Tanhain, and then I end up Basabach to Letztavach, Basabach to Tanhain. What am I doing now? And then I have freebies. I'll explain to you what the freebies are about. I get a lot. I have students all over the world who love their Rebbe, and they send me things I should know. So some of it I tucker incorporate, but I can't throw it out. So I offer it, that you'll see in a minute what we're talking about. So what do we do today? We've brought you to the Shanghai story. The Shanghai story is extremely important. And next week we hit the march in Washington, which changed my Rebbe's thinking. And I have new information. Someone sent me a picture which you may or may not appreciate, but my eldest daughter's law partner, these are two women who have run a law firm for 5 to 30 years now, my eldest daughter's law partner is married to an American. His grandfather was Rabbi Jacob Meskin, who redeemed me January 1st, 1938, Rabbi Yaakov HaKohen Meskin. And there's a picture of Rabbi Meskin with his two sons marching with the rabbis in 1943. So that's what we're going to pick up next week. And the Sunday's class is 36,000 shekel to the IOU list. It doesn't go for nothing, because I don't want to be a doctor who heals for nothing, who's worth nothing, as the Gemara says, Shafia. We're dealing with one of the first shuvot ever written about the status of a computer from the point of view of halacha. It's very fascinating, and you'll see Reb Menashe Klein reveals his mindset Very interesting, and I'm tying it in with Rabbi Ruchim Gerelick. For your $36,000 to the IOU list, which is never collected anyway, you'll get your money's worth. Okay, this I'll save for next week, the freebies. First of all, if there's anyone who's Hasidish, if you ever needed proof of what's happened, the rebirth, this is the Yerid Svarim around Yutet Kislev, Chabad's taking over Binyanei Choma. These are the books that are available, not Rakefet's books. Only Hasidic volumes. It's unbelievable. And they're giving it away for pennies. I told my granddaughter, any book you buy, I'm paying for. Here, if you want to collect, I have a granddaughter who's interested in learning Tanya now. My only granddaughter. I have endless, Baruch Hashem, many, many, many grandsons, but one granddaughter. On the great-grandchild family, it's a little better, but still, I can field many baseball teams, Baruch Hashem, except that those kids don't know what baseball is all about. Tell them soccer, you'll be better off. Hitori, Hitori, only in Israel, this was given out in Yeshuas. Remember I told you yesterday about Berkowitz, who fought that the cinemas should be open on Shabbos. He's portrayed here as the Gadol Hadar and Ribbono Shel Olam Degel HaTorah. I can't even say it, forget it. The Hasidic world from a Zayin Gesund. Here is this is Chabad. This is a story from the Kinas Shluchim of a Chabad rapper who was the star at the Kinas Shluchim when he did his music. And you got to read his life story. He was a nobody, a nothing. Every teacher he had slapped his face. And his parents said, you're a nice vaf and you're never going to amount to anything. And a Chabadnik with Seichel said to this kid, you be yourself and you'll be the greatest kid in the world. And as a Machanach, I can tell you that's the only way to go. And look what became of him. This is the Kinas Shluchim with the pictures of the banquet and the security around it. This is the Kinas Shluchim, the keynote speaker. I don't know if he spoke in Russian or in English, Yomo. This Chabad, they have billionaires that are part of the Chabad movement. The Baruch Hashem, why you could only tap into Chabad, they would solve all their financial problems. But everyone laughs at Rakefet, so it doesn't. I came up with a whole plan for why you. They laughed me out. Now, this is New York, what's going on. Do you know that a law was passed that if you study Talmud, you don't have to study anything else in high school because Talmud sharpens your mind? This was passed by the New York Assembly. Why? Because Hasidic kids went to court. You killed us. You deprived us of education. And here's the article. Yeshivas are not the problem. Hasidic yeshivas are. But can you imagine the influence the Chassidim have that they can control the New York State Assembly? This is on the odd Chabad connection between Putin and Trump. This is the New York, Washington Monthly, where they, you got to read it to believe it, but there is a connection, but I wouldn't take it too seriously. This is a fabulous story where I was in Russia a year ago with the what's going on in Moscow. They opened up in the main Chabad center, a lending depot where any poor person can come in and get furniture and get carriage and their children, no end to the chesed. Jerusalem Post on Uri Zohar, the quintessential Baal Tshuva, a movie just came out about his life. There's a nice article here. This is on, if you believe in Trump, make America great again. They're taking orders for new dreidels that have M-A-G-A. Very interesting to see. This is unbelievable. This my wife discussed with me. She came, this is the kids' shluchim banquet. These are kids that grow up all over the world. They have no one to talk with. In Atlanta, Simon has more people, Itaniyala, people to talk with than this kids. And yet these kids, the percentage of those that remain Chabadnik and Frum is unbelievable. We grow up in Israel, the Litvish Welt, 15% fall away. The our world, that Tzioni, 15%. And here, I was at a wedding last night, I told you. Every last lady there was dressed sneers 1,000,000,000%. One girl was half naked with a husband without a yarmulke, with a baby, and I couldn't believe. I said, who is this? The sister of the Kala. You should see her father, Metabod, with a big kippah sugar, teaches Tanakh. She's in rebellion, but what a rebellion to embarrass your parents in public, embarrass your sister in public. Come to a wedding where you stick out like a sore thumb. We all lose out. But that you should see these kids. And I saw Chabad online where they interviewed these kids. And the kids say, yes, sometimes we think we'd like to move to a community where we'd have friends who observe Shabbat and think like us and act like us. But we're shluchim of the Rebbe. A 10-year-old kid is speaking. Wow. This is unbelievable. You now have the first Shtreimel wearer in the New York State Assembly. Simcha Eichenstein, 34, a Hasidic guy from Borough Park who wears a Shtreimel on Shabbos, will replace Dov Heitken as the Democrat Haredi representative of the New York State Assembly. This is very moving. I know the person who, one deed is worth 1,000 words, it's Rabbi Mordechai Gutnick and his interaction with the Rebbe. I stayed in his home when I was in Sydney. This is a number of interviews, people who knew the Rebbe. Interesting. This is correspondence, Yitzchak, this is for you, between Rabbi Nissim Mindel and the Hebrew Union College on the story of Esav and Yaakov, notoriously misrepresented by non-Jews. And they're arguing here about how to translate for a translation. This, I have to tell you, is something my wife and I always thought, and we now found out, we knew what we were thinking about. New York Times article, how emotions can affect the heart. And a fabulous article, research why. For it begins with people who lose a spouse. A certain percentage have heart failure within a few months. Why? Emotion, stress, loss, atmos nefesh. You've got to be a misanik to overcome heart challenge. And Be'ezrat Hashem, we can learn a lot. Finally, two copies of the synagogue I spoke about, Russia's westernmost synagogue, rebuilt 80 years after Kristallnacht destruction. And finally, Rav Moshe Tzvi, I want to make you a shluach. Go into Ari Berman and tell him, the more I think about it, the idea I proposed to him can be fabulous for the yeshiva. And you'll open up some heavier, give it a year or two, let it function, do a little outreach, build a mikvah, get the New York Times to cover. Yeshiva University builds mikvah. Now let them explain. And I'll, you know how I'll know that you succeeded? I'm going to tell you very easily. You can judge me. My life is an open book. Teaching Torah 60 years. All right. It's easy to judge Rakefet. Fine. You know, I'm going to judge you. The next time I come uptown and spend 2 weeks there, I don't want to see any student walking on campus without a kippah. If I see, I can't believe my wife still, she's furious. We were there a number of years ago, Bernard Rebbe, we saw a few. This time, every day, every go into the elevator, go here, go there. Rebbeinu Shalom, look up a guy named Rothkopf, wrote a book on Rabbi Revel. Go into the index and look up Harris Zelig, S-C-L-I-G, and then you'll see why Rakefet doesn't sleep at night. Rebbeinu Shalom, so you, I want to judge you when I get back. I'm going to look around that campus. And boy, black and white, as you are dressed, it will tell me whether you've succeeded or lost. My dear students, until we meet again in health and happiness, a good voting tomorrow for those who vote. Remember, Rakefet says, may Leon become a lion. He writes his name in English, L-I-O-N. So I hope for the best, but it is a disgrace for the city of Yerushalayim that these are our two candidates. It's unbelievable. The holiest city in the world, the most important city in the world, the city that has the highest percentage of geniuses and bright people living in the city, and these are our two candidates. Dove, can you vote yet? Where do you stand?
I
can't vote for Berkowitz. I said I'm going to put a clothespin on my nose. Remember what I said yesterday? One part of the clothes says Lieberman, this says Derry, but I'm going to have to vote for Lyon. I mean, these are the Shemesh Shabbos. Till we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya. Please help yourself to all the information.
Okay, you gave me the book by Gil Stubbe.
Right. So I will see.